Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome to Extraction Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, this is Brad Weber. And the board, SP Futures up 11 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures up 48. And we have Dow Futures up about 60. So we're looking to come back from some of the losses yesterday. We'll see. As a way of review, yesterday the Dow was down 89, but the S&P was down 25. NASDAQ was down a full point and a half, point and a quarter percent, and down 165. So, finally had somewhat of a, finally, I mean, we had a turnaround in Tesla. It's not like, I'm saying we should have or not, but we did. And Tesla hadn't been down in a while. We had some of the other big stocks down yesterday for the first time in a while. So that was yesterday. We had a big game last night, Matty.
Yeah, the national championship game last night. I watched the first half, and that's about as far as I made it. But Alabama had no problem with Ohio State, 52-24, final in that one.
So what
to
if somebody
13-0?
Yeah. So what if somebody was like, you know, even older and grumpier than me, and were to say, I'm gonna say just without knowing or anything, which is fine. Okay, I can do fake news. That I don't know. I've ever watched a game with more and longer commercials than last night, and yet.
It was obnoxious.
And yet, wasn't that cable? or where am I missing this?
It was cable.
Hey, you're supposed to be giving Brendan a call, as I mentioned him yesterday. Do you have his number?
I can track it down.
All right. And, meanwhile, I'll opine. The market had a turn. It's coming back a little bit today. We have the rumors that are sort of circulating. We're trying to corral today. I'm going to talk quite a bit about the market today because we're going to have our man Mike James on for... the whole second, Mike Hart. Yeah, who's Mike James? We got a Mike James somewhere, didn't we? Like, I'm spinning names together like my grandmother.
There's a basketball player named Mike James.
Yeah, we had somebody. Some article I read was he was the author or something. Anyway, we have Mike Hart. and Mike, we're going to talk a lot about the individual stocks and equities and what market turns are made from and how you know and what the Fed. I mean, obviously, right now the word is from the Democrats is that. You're going to get, you know, another $2 trillion worth of stimulus. And it's sort of in my experience that it's one thing to call for that stuff. It's quite another to actually do it. I mean, right now we have 1 million people calling for, you know, Trump's oust in the next 7 days. You know, I don't see that happening. But right now it seems to be the incredible story was you want to get your name on TV calling for his ouster in the next 7 days. So... to the extent that people do that knowing it's not going to happen, to me that's like another way to lie to people, but we're seeming to find all kinds of crazy ways to bear false witness, as the Bible said. Because I don't know how what you gain from that necessarily, but next Tuesday seems pretty close to me, but that just be me. But we have, in my head, we watched people talk yesterday all day long about vaccines and getting the vaccines out there. In the meantime, you hear stories about the so unorganized that the things are spoiling or throwing them out. And I don't understand why these people, why we can't get this together. I don't understand. This is the... Brennan, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Chief. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right. So stop me from railing on our populace, because I was just saying, if you listen to the news all day yesterday like I have to do, all I did was listen to a bunch of people, one after another, expressing their outrage that we have to get rid of the president by next Tuesday. When everybody knows it's not going to happen, but yet you want your name in the hat as saying you wanted it to happen. And then we had another seemingly hundreds of people talking about giving increased vaccines, getting them out there, and yet it doesn't look like we have very few worker bees actually giving them, and all I'm hearing now is stories of places that have been shipped the vaccines that didn't give them to people and have to throw them out. I mean, What is wrong with us? is somebody put saltpeter in the water or what?
Well, they are strange times. It's like 2020 is still continuing.
But what? Well,
I'm amazed at the shortfall in the way the vaccine is being rolled out to folks. You would think that there would be a better plan to get it, to get the actual vaccine in the arms of all the people.
Well, the one that I always, and I shouldn't, because I keep going out like a broken record. If everybody knows what that term even means. But the people who can't go anywhere, Brendan, that appear to be responsible for 1% of the population, of course you can only be responsible for yourself and the population, and almost half the deaths are in nursing homes. They're sitting right there. All you gotta do is pull up in a car, open up the trunk, pull it out, and go give people shots. We can't even do that. I mean, they're not going anywhere. You don't have to herd those people, do you? They're right there.
No, I am surprised that the rollout hasn't happened better, getting people out, getting a number of people vaccinated. It seems like there is a dearth of people who are able to give the shots in the first place, but also getting the vaccines out to the neighborhoods, to the populace that needs to get them, not just the nursing homes. I mean, you grilled a lot about the getting the economy back rolling. While it is important to get folks in the nursing homes vaccinated, I think it's also important to get the other folks in all walks of life in our society vaccinated so we can get back to operation full bore.
Well, I think here's my reason why I zero on nursing homes, Brendan, is if you take care of that group, 1% of the people are responsible for 45 to 50% of the deaths. So if you stop that, the death numbers drop so much that maybe a lot of other people won't think they're going to die if they get it. Because the numbers are so skewed toward the older people.
I think there's a difference now. I really think there's been a shift in thinking that it's not so much the fear of death, because I think the percentage of people dying has been low for quite some time. The people who are infected dying. But the bigger concern right now is the number of hospitalizations and the care, the availability of care, healthcare workers to treat those that are in the hospitals, I think is a bigger concern.
Well, as you know, I had some issues. Thank God, it looked like they're all over. I'm back to myself here. Who knows? I might last for another 30 years. But the two hospitals that I had to go for tests in and so forth, Brendan, they're empty. There was nobody there. I mean, what are these numbers? Can we believe anything? Well, I don't think Chicago's been in. No, they haven't said that the places here are full. But you keep talking about Illinois, and I understand where there's pockets, and we've talked about this for a long time. So I think the people on the show at least have a reasonable clue what's going on. I can understand, and this is I think the term fake news comes to out there, not from the right or anybody like that. I can get it if all of a sudden there hasn't been any COVID, and this thing is more infectious. Most people, if you don't know, I know that this thing is more infectious than anything, because I've been reading this stuff from overseas, and we have people calling in here that one person walked into a nursing home and 42 people. I mean, this is a real infectious disease. Probably more infectious than anything we've had other than measles and maybe smallpox, but we don't have those around anymore, knock on wood. But I mean, it doesn't surprise me that if somebody wanders into Centralia, Illinois, and infects 50 people, then how many beds does the Centralia Hospital have? It's not like they got 1,000, so it doesn't surprise me that there's hospitals that are having big problems. But the way the thing is expanded by the news, I had to go to Evanston for a procedure. Brendan, I walk in, I'm the only person in the place, for God's sake. I mean, it's not like the place is full, they're not. But the impression we're giving people is that every single hospital has got people waiting in line in the emergency room. That's just not true.
Well, that may have been your experience. I'm not doubting your word, but it seems like there are places in both in the state of Illinois and
yes,
in other states where that's not the case. My daughter is a hospital worker, and she's been overwhelmed.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. Southwest suburbs.
But now why? Because for some reason, the southwest suburbs were sort of, seemingly not all that affected for a while, then all of a sudden they were. I don't know if it's the new strain or what it is, but you're right. All of a sudden, that became one of the hotbeds. But is there a procedure in place when we have all these people doing all this stuff? Is there a procedure in place ever for, say Silver Cross? I don't know where she works. I'm not going to ask, but let's pick a southwest suburb place. Is there a procedure for people to show up in a nice van and take 12 people to Evanston or someplace northwest that's empty?
Well, I don't know if that kind of a transfer is in place or not, but or even someplace that's closer, not necessarily Evanston, but another hospital that's nearby. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that there are areas of the metropolitan area that have been overwhelmed for a while, and that's a significant thing that they're facing. I also know that that's true in other parts of the country.
I would agree with you.
Southern California, Arizona, places like that, where there are spikes, and the healthcare workers are being overworked. There aren't enough beds in certain facilities. It ebbs and flows. It certainly ebbs and flows. So it may be that you were in an ebbed position when you were in the procedure at your hospital, and had you been in the same situation a week or two later, you would have been in one of those other situations where it was overqualified. But I think that it is really important, though, to get the vaccines out to people of all age groups, not just your comment to get them in the people's arms who are in the nursing homes, but to get people of all walks of life, all age groups, as soon as possible. And that includes people who are everyday folks who are fully functional, not in nursing homes, or over 65.
I would agree.
Are also at a higher risk of infection.
Well, if you want people to go back to work and not be afraid, you got to get everybody pretty fast. But
I agree.
But
you have to get everybody pretty fast.
But it seems like I'm not necessarily arguing with anybody, but I'm pointing out stuff, Brennan. And one of the things, and I know you're a Southsider, and you've had jobs other than being attorneys. There's a mechanism to this when people rail about stuff. When I worked at Pullman downtown, all right, this is way before they had computers and WordPerfect and all these kinds of things, and WordPerfect was the first one. I don't know if we use it anymore. But the ladies, they were all ladies, who worked as people's secretaries, and that's what they were called at the time. If somebody was overwhelmed because their boss had some huge thing to put out, without even telling anybody, the girls would get together whenever they had coffee or whatever. Instead of one person working until 9 o'clock, they all worked till 6 because they were all pals and they all took care of each other. And I wonder in this day and age when we can't wait to have every hospital combined with another one. I was listening to News Radio 78 a while ago, and I had this lady on there, and she probably could have been your daughter, and she's railing about the amount of people that are sick and she can't deal with it. And, you know, and she sounded like a real straight-up, regular, you know, solid person who was a nurse and gave a crap about her people, just what you want. And then all of a sudden, at the end, they go, she's from someplace North Dakota. Well, if you didn't listen to the trail of the thing, you would think this was happening at, like, Rush or someplace. Not that it's any worse or whatever, but my question is, in this country, and this is all, I go back to all the crap from 9/11. All right, and this is what is, if people want to know what my theme is, it's always goes back to that piece of crap legislation, the Patriot Act and all this other stuff, and Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of all this stuff, Brendan, way back then, and I'm not skipping subjects, I'm just zeroing the same one, was to be able to have the coordination in all these areas to deal with these kinds of problems. This is no different and somebody putting a dirty bomb off in Central Illinois or downtown Chicago. What is the coordination to get care to people and to spread people out and to move people to where you have facilities available? There's none, it doesn't appear. And didn't we pay for all this?
I agree with you, but that should be a coordination of efforts at the state and the federal level. And if you're talking specifically, now I'm not sure where you're going with your comments here, because are you talking about the distribution of the vaccine, or are you talking
about
two different topics here that we could
right. I'm always on two different topics. That's makes it hard for my guests, I know, but let's stick with general care. We hit with COVID, runs into, I'll pick a place, Centralia. There's two hospitals or however many in Centralia. They're overwhelmed. Do we just put nurses on TV or radio and talk about how overwhelmed we are, or do we find a way to get them 100 patients from there to a place that isn't overwhelmed? I don't see that happening at all, do you? Wasn't that all the entire workings of this 9 bazillion page Patriot Act and Homeland Security, that we're going to have this kind of coordination?
Okay, but my understanding is that for a long time that was possible. When New York was overwhelmed in the springtime, There were people, healthcare workers from all over the country, who went to New York to do work in New York and take care of people in hospitals. They set up satellite offices outside the hospitals to take care of the people in the open call. As that spike increased across the country, people who would fly from Arizona to New York, or California to New York, or Texas to New York, were dealing with their own hotspots in their own areas and were no longer available to go to New York. So the distribution of healthcare workers is a finite amount of workers around the country. And they were not able to go to different spots because too many hotspots were developing in other parts of the country.
Okay, and we never want to move patients because they have the COVID.
No, the patients were moved, but in some cases, patients weren't able to be moved until because nearby facilities in certain areas, like El Paso, Texas, was an area where the healthcare system was overwhelmed, and there weren't beds available for hundreds of miles around. It wasn't that they were unable or unwilling to move them. There was no place for them to go in a reasonable period of time, because it's not only the number of beds that are available to treat people, but the people who use staff. I mean, you might be able to get people like, we'll pick an example. You or Maddie are hired to help out in this crisis. You're not trained medical professionals, so you can't really help out the patient. Even if you were willing to go to a hospital and partake as a healthcare worker, you're not trained for it. It's a finite source of resources. And without the experience, I mean, you can't recreate a doctor or a nurse in the way that you'd recreate a widget and distribute it or healthcare.
I'll push back on that a little bit. Give me 20 minutes of education, and I can vaccinate people.
Okay. Again, you're shifting all over the place.
Yeah, I know.
If we're talking about healthcare providers that are in beds that are available,
right,
that's a different question than you being able to stick a needle in somebody's arm.
Well,
I'm not going to get into the discussion whether 20 minutes will allow you to stick a needle in somebody's arm, but I do think that there's more to that, to watch for complications or to ask the right questions when somebody's getting vaccinated. With all due respect to you, I don't know that I'd want to get a vaccine from you. of knowledge of injecting me with something.
Well, I mean, we make this out to be somewhat more than it is, Brendan, is because we have people in this country with diabetes that inject themselves every day, right? I mean, what I'm saying is, I guess my question is, my summary is, given all the planning we seem to have paid for in the last 20 years, and all the planning that people supposedly have done, are you happy with what we've paid for? I'm not.
Well, that's now we're going into another complete
subject. No, but it's the same thing. It's all the same subject for me. I mean,
again, you're layering on different things here that have some sort of a connection, but they're also very disjointed. I think that the rollout should be handled much better. I think that we should have more resources available for the vaccine, definitely.
You see, I think that after 9/11, what I think we paid for, you know, we supposedly planned for, and we have people in place, you know, the Center of Disease Control watching out for the next pandemic that seemed to have missed this one. I mean, our people all, I mean, I looked at Hurricane Katrina, I look at all these things are all disasters in terms of moving people, getting people health care, getting people evacuated if need be. All those things are all part of the same plan to me. And every single time something like this has happened in the last 20 years, we've found that we weren't quite up to snuff. And yet we still seem to be paying for it. We've lost all kinds of freedoms because of it, right? And we have people that seem to be hired for it. And yet every single time, it seems like we land short. And that's my bitch, basically, in a summary.
Okay. Well, I can't agree with you. It seems like we're not getting all the money for it that we paid for in all these disaster things. Now, yeah, I think that the reason for that is at several levels of government and also the way that the American public approaches it as well. But, you know, there are other things besides that. I mean, have you been following the doings in Springfield with Mike Madigan?
Now, what is it? Him still being up for the job, but removing his name right now, is that, I was talking to my attorney buddies last night, and he said that's, in some ways, that's brilliant because the people who are against him are stopping him from getting the 60 votes, but they're never going to get him either. And they're going to come back to him, they're going to come back to him hat in hand and say, you're the only guy that can get close to 60, you're back in.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what he's trying to do, yes.
Do you think
right
that's...
Now he's stuck. He needs 60 votes from the members of the House to be elected Speaker of the House. At last count, he had 51, I think. So he's 9 votes short. And there are a contingent of about 19 or so Democrats who will say, under no circumstances will we vote for you. The next person in the Democratic Party who has a number of votes is one of the women, I think it's Ann Williams, who has about 13 or 17 votes, something like that. So she's significantly farther behind than he is. But what he's doing is suspending his campaign, saying, okay, come up with somebody else. And that looks like it's not going to happen. And unfortunately, the state legislature needs to select a Speaker of the House before they can conduct any business in Springfield.
Well, I don't... How far do you get, and this is just a general question, not a legal question, how far do you get when the orangutan in the room just gets too big and you can't walk around because the guy's in your way? I mean, Illinois, the numbers here, I mean, Mike Madigan, and I, personality-wise, I mean, I don't necessarily like the policies and where he's led us, but I don't care if you put Solomon in that job right now, Brennan. I mean, how are we going to deal... I was talking to somebody the other night, and he was telling me that he had dinner with a guy, and everybody would know the name, so I won't lob the name out there. The dude's got 5 pensions.
Mm-hmm.
And how, I mean, this, anybody who doesn't think that this problem has to get fixed, that you have to say to people like that, pick one. Pick the largest one. You're not getting, I mean, this, we cannot, and if we keep going another 80,000 people a year for another 3 or 4 years, I don't think we're savable, Brent. The numbers just don't add up. It's like
I agree. We're in a very bad situation in the city of Illinois. That's the numbers. The financial numbers are not looking very good right now.
But I mean, the people that are doing the stuff are getting worse. I mean, the raise they gave the teachers 2 years ago, when the city decided to raise taxes, Emanuel, raise fees, and throw money at the pension program. And then give everybody a raise. All he did was just erase all the good he just did.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also, you did hit on a very notable target for pensions, and those that are double dipping or triple dipping or more. And there are not a lot of folks who are doing that, but there are several who are doing that, getting multiple pensions from different state, city, local government pension funds, which contributes to the problem. Other problems include things like the automatic COLA every year for those who are getting a pension. Even if it's the COLA increase, I think, is 3%, regardless of what the cost of living actually is on an annual basis. So there are things that need to be corrected in the pension system, which I think contributed to the downfall of the Pritzker tax this past November in the election, when they refused to put on the ballot, the same ballot, any question about any amendment to the pension provision of the state constitution.
I think
a lot of the pension problems is due to the fact that there's a provision in the Illinois constitution that says that the rights of the pension cannot be diminished, even among agreement of the parties. And actually, one of the people who was instrumental in putting that in place was a guy by the name of Michael Madigan. He was at ConCon in 1971.
But that was at the time. It was designed to have a. It was a design to where you couldn't, like the governor, if he didn't like what the Supreme Court was doing, he couldn't threaten to take their pensions away.
The reason that was put in place was because an agreement with labor around the state, because in previous decades, pension funds were denied people, and it was abused in a way that nobody had a pension,
right?
Because and we were completely shortfalling. And in order to get that passed, in order to get the Constitution passed, a lot of labor groups said we want protection from the state legislature that you're not going to take away our pensions completely.
But it's become
the constitutional provision was put in there that cannot be changed without a constitutional amendment at this point, and that's been backed up by decisions of the Illinois State Supreme Court.
Which we had no, in my mind, and you're going to tell me I'm wrong again, and I know you're right, but still, I feel this way, they have no business, since they're under the same program, making that call.
I agree with you. there is obviously a conflict of interest when the Supreme Court justices are covered by the same provision that they're applying at.
Well, but my issue with those guys is, and I don't really know them personally. The only one I knew was Bob Thomas, because he was a kicker at Notre Dame, and he graduated the same year. Anyway, it's gone beyond preservation of pension, and I don't really have a problem, Brendan, with the bus driver or the teacher who actually spends 40 years in the classroom. I don't want to drop their pension. They're not the ones I'm looking for, but it's become preservation of loophole. That if you can get your if you can get your sick leave the last year and your pension is like 40% higher than you ever made.
Your friend Richard Daley got an increase in his salary because of being a substitute teacher for a couple of days at a time when he overlapped some time in Springfield. I don't remember all the details, but he got a pension boost because of a very short term position that he held when he was in the state legislature.
I think it was one day he was put back on as a teacher or something, and it increased his pension $40,000 a year. I'm not 100% positive. But look at Mike Pence. He's got a pension. He's up to like four or five pensions. He was a legislator in Indiana. He was governor in Indiana. They're two separate pensions. And to be honest, Brendan, one of the reasons why I don't want Trump thrown out by next Tuesday, last thing I want is Mike Pence, after 2 days in there, to have a lifetime pension as a president and Secret Service protection for the next 40 years. But he'd be entitled to it.
That's a very valid point. That's a very valid point that I don't know that he would qualify for that.
Why?
Being president for a couple of days.
I'll bet he would.
That's certainly a concern.
I'll bet he would. I
don't know the answer. You may be correct about that. I don't know. I don't know that he would have lifetime protection if that happens. But, I think that's almost worth the risk.
Anyway, Brendan, hey, are you on the road? If so, drive safe.
Yeah, we're driving back from Denver. We were in Denver visiting our granddaughter, and so we drove both ways, and we're currently in Des Moines, Iowa on the way back.
Good for you. Well, the weather's decent, so drive safe, and talk at you next week.
All right.
SP Futures up 11.25, NASDAQ Futures up 48. Be right back, Mr. Joel and Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen, Mr. Mayor Weber on the board. S&P futures up 10.25 after being down yesterday. So we're up 40% of what we were down yesterday. NASDAQ futures up 44. Not so much there, up 25% of what they were down yesterday. The Dow is actually up almost the same amount. It was up yesterday, only 70, up 71. It wasn't down very much yesterday. The Dow was the outlier to the up, to not so much to the downside. Let's put it that way. So and we have Europe today. We got the DAX down 2, call that flat. But they were... down more yesterday. FTSE was down 50 today, however. That's 0.7%. CAC down 9.1%. So these guys have been uneven in Europe, and then they catch up the next day. Kind of interesting. Nikkei, which was closed yesterday, is up 25 bucks today, 0.1%. Shanghai up 76, 2%. Yesterday were down 1%. Hang Seng up 368. That's 1.3%. The mainland Chinese markets are really up 2% totally today, which is... sort of interesting. Maybe Joel will know why that is when we get him in a second. Bonds, 10-year, 1.17 as it goes up every day now, up 3 basis points today. We sat, Andy, how long? Years waiting for this thing to go from 0.65 or 0.69 to 0.7, and now all of a sudden it goes up 3 or 4 ticks a day. Bund, minus 0.47. It's the highest, the least negative, the highest we've seen that in a while. Japan, positive 0.03. That one never moves. Oil. At least he hasn't yet. Up 75 cents down to $53. That's as high as we've seen there in a while. Brent up 79 cents, $56.45. Maybe $60 Brent is really on the table, like some people have been saying. Natural gas up 9 cents, back up to $2.83. Looks like it's going up with the rest of them, even though I really don't see any cold weather coming flying by, Manny, but you're in charge of that. Arbub up 2 cents, $1.54. We've got gold up 9.60. 1860, so a little bit of a bounce there. Silver up 24 cents to 25.53. Copper up 6 cents, 3.62. If you were looking at metals to tell you, or oil saying there was no inflation, you better look again now. Maddie, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Very quiet coming in on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No delays to speak of at all. So enjoy a nice quiet commute if you're heading in this morning. Weather today, lots of clouds, a bit warmer than yesterday, though. We'll warm up this afternoon to a high of 38. Right now, it is mostly clear and 27 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 66 today. Right now, it's clear and 38. In sports, college football national championship game was last night, and Ohio State stuck around for a little while, about a quarter or so, and then Alabama pulled away and then really piled on in the second half. Winning 52-24 over the Buckeyes. Alabama finishes at 13-0. I believe that's their 8th national championship in the last 14 years.
That's a lot.
Crazy like that. Ohio State finishes their season at 7-1. College hoops, number 25 UConn held on to beat DePaul last night, 60-53. Loyola outlasted Indiana State, 58-48. NBA basketball, Bulls were supposed to be back in action tonight, but that game is postponed due to a COVID outbreak on the Celtics roster. No makeup date announced yet. Suns were in action last night. They were blown out by the Wizards, 128-107. Chief.
So if you got 7 guys down, why not just give it to everybody? And then you're good for the year. Just saying. Hey, Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good. They want to talk sports today?
Yeah. You're going to want to talk sports.
Your Michigan game tonight.
Yeah, your Michigan team looks great.
Yeah. Wow. They're, Juwan has them playing well. They're deep. We got, another center that was injured, plantar fasciitis about 6-7 weeks ago. He's due back, and man, he's just a good coach and deep. So that I'm happy. Tough game on the road at Wisconsin. That's not a high probability game, but we'll see. Plus, being undefeated makes me a little nervous, but see what we can do on the road. Had a lot of home games so far.
What is why is Illinois? It looks like they're barn burners. Why are they so inconsistent? They're just not, are they not deep enough, or what's their story?
I looked at the Big Ten, preseason standings, and they had Illinois at the top, and they had Michigan fourth or fifth, and I'm like, and I tried to name who were the good Illinois players were, and I really couldn't. So, sometimes you get overrated a little bit. I don't know exactly what's going on with them, but, maybe they're not as good as everyone thought, and maybe they're not as poor as people are thinking now. So, can't really tell you. Their coach is intimidating as hell. I mean, every time I look at that guy, I get scared.
Well, they've got that monster in the middle. They got a kid in the middle that's really good, and they've got the backcourt that's real good. But
the advanced analytics like KenPom and those systems still have Illinois in the top eight. They have Michigan number seven. Yeah, they have Iowa number three, Wisconsin number five, Michigan seven, Illinois eight. So they still really like the Big Ten.
We could send 9, 10, 11 teams there to the big dance if we get to play it.
Well, I've got issues with everything today. I don't know. I've always had kind of an issue with college refereeing, especially with the five fouls versus six in the pros. And I remember when Shaq played and a bunch of other guys that were good players that I used to see come through Notre Dame when I was there. And this big kid in the middle at Illinois, the difference between whether he's on the road and some ref, gets three paltry fouls on him and people beat on him, and because he's so big, he never gets a foul called. I mean, it seems like so the difference between him getting too early and not is dramatic for that team. I mean, that's just the way college ball is, or am I being too cynical?
I agree, and that's why Hunter Dickinson's just been playing unbelievable, but he's still young, and this Austin Davis, the guy I was referring to, could come in and, I don't know. I mean, I think he's still going to start Dickinson. They also got Brandon Johns. But boy, oh boy, I tell you, it's just, having depth, and you're right, avoiding foul trouble, especially on the road, is very, very important.
Is Iowa still considered number one in the Big Ten? I mean, I was reading the rankings yesterday, and most people still had Iowa number one. Where do they get all these people?
I don't know. I was watching them the other day, and that Sam McCaffrey, I know he's got his kid, that Luca Garza is unbelievable. I mean, the guy's just doing a heck of a job down there, and they, once again, it's just, they're gritty, playing good defense, and, not turning the ball over. That's the keys.
Joel, I know what I wanted to ask you, and Maddie, by the way, because I haven't asked him that, since all this happened in the Capitol, it's kind of put other things on the back burner, and one of the things it put on the back burner was the bill that was introduced in, was in the House or the Senate, man? I think it was the House, but I'm not positive. But the revamping of college athletics, and they're talking about people being able to transfer every year, and I don't know how far that's going to go, but that would really be something for basketball. Anybody who felt he wasn't playing would be playing somewhere else the next year. That, I don't know. We're starting to see. I mean, the Irish, I don't know if Michigan has any, but you're really starting to see a lot of teams, especially teams that don't go the one and done, are going with these graduate transfers. Is Michigan doing any of that? Or, Wisconsin, somebody in the Big Ten did a couple of them. Who was it?
I stand corrected. That game is in a square. That game is in Ann Arbor. Michigan is favored by 3.5. We got a big upgrade at point guard. We had Xavier Simpson last year, his famous baby hug from anywhere. But we picked up Mike Smith, and he was a guard at Columbia. And if you ask me, we're getting a lot better guard play. So when you've got someone running your offense that can hit some three-pointers, right, then you're doing a heck of a lot better than, if Simpson used to turn the ball over, he couldn't really hit the free throws. So, yeah, Michigan's got him. Also, Sean D. Brown came over from Wake Forest. And then there's another guy, I think, that came over from Columbia that's not playing real well. And then on the flip side, we let this Colin Castleton go down to Florida, and Juwan let him out of his scholarship. And I think he's starting for Florida down there. And we also lost David DeJulius. So it's worked on. I don't think he got the waiver. So it's working on both ends on the transfer. right now, Michigan is coming out on the positive end of the whole transfer situation.
Well, now, when you say transferred, are these graduate guys have already graduated, or are these people that are undergrad that have just transferred and set out the year?
Actually, Mike Smith is a graduate, and maybe I think maybe Shawnee Brown is too. Shawnee Brown is like 6th, 7th guy off the bench, just all kinds of energy and can hit the 3-pointer too. So you're right. I think there are graduate transfers, but I think what you're seeing now is more of a willingness for coaches, to give up, and say, hey, I'll let you out of here. You're not playing as much. But I want to touch on the Harbaugh situation real quick,
yes. Go ahead.
They had to do it. It'd be hard to bring someone in. Two names we're going to be talking about for the next 2 years. J.J. McCarthy, quarterback, coming in top-rated. And we're finally going to have a running back with Donovan Edwards from West Bloomfield, my local area. Also, I think Alabama, they should go back, not the college All-Star. Remember the college football All-Star game, the Chicago Classic?
Yeah.
It should be Alabama against the Super Bowl champ, because there's just no comparison. Alabama, heads and tails above anybody. Michigan's never going to catch them, at least as long as Nick Saban's there.
Well, so what did they end up doing with Carbaugh? They gave him less money, right?
Cut salary in half. Because they said they chopped it in half. Obviously, he didn't get any sniffs from the NFL. They cut his salary in half, and they made the buyout much, much lower. So, and they extended him 4 years. So he's still, he's got a deal. He's got to perform. We're just, and they're writing here, oh, Michigan's admitting that it's not a football school. We haven't been a football school since Roy Carr left in 2007. We should have never gotten rid of him. He's going to get us back to respectability, and then our next head coach is going to be the linebackers coach right now currently for the Ravens. That's Mike McDonald. He's going to come in. He's going to rebuild the defense. We're going to get back to playing some decent defense. Harbaugh's going to get us back to respectability, and Mike McDonald's going to take over as head coach when Harbaugh retires in 4 years.
Well, we got to write that down and key punch it like they used to do on the floor.
Time it, man. Get that time stat clock in there.
That's right.
Now, Chief.
All right, take care of yourself, buddy. We'll talk at you next week. SP Futures up 11:50, NASDAQ Futures up 49. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 49. We have Mr. Kenny Pulcheri with us. Kenny, I just want to let you know that I agree with you, I've not seen an outrage like this, fake news like this of any kind recently. I was at the Myers on Sunday morning, and I see the National Enquirer, the original fake news, and I see 25 highest, what was it, the 25 the wealthiest and most influential people who have admitted to having COVID. So I immediately yanked the thing off there, and I wonder if Kenny made the top 10, and you were not even in the top 25, and I was seething. I was so pissed off. How could you not? How could you have been left out of this? And are your attorneys working on it as we speak?
No. That's fine. It's a list I don't mind not being on. Although I've had it on, I don't mind not being on it.
Well, but I mean, they have to. It's fake news.
You're not on it either, right?
Well, yeah, but you're one of you're the national guy. I'm just a regular old schlump in Chicago. Anyway, how are you, bud?
I'm good. I'm just like everybody else. I guess I'm just trying to figure out what the hell is going on in the world and what the hell is going on in the United States. You know what I mean? With after the events last week, the market just ran right through. Didn't even blink an eye. On Thursday morning, didn't even blink an eye. Nothing had happened on Wednesday, which is a little bit curious to me because you start to think to yourself, there was no reaction. Like what? There should have been some reaction, not necessarily a collapse, but there should have been some concern and angst. And the fact that there wasn't, I think, is even more curious to me about what's going on in the market, who's pushing it, where all the demand is coming from. At this point, considering we're as high as we are, we've taken the market to where we are based on, you know, Biden's win and Biden's proposed trillions and trillions with an S, proposal and what to expect, which we'll find out on Thursday when he makes that announcement. But I have to be honest with you, I was just really, really surprised, and a little bit concerned that there was no reaction on Thursday.
I can't disagree more, or I mean, I can't agree more. In normal times, but Kenny, just look at the money supply numbers every week, 10 billion, 15 billion a day, just coming into the place. I mean, and one of my,
I get it. I just, you know, and I understand that, you know, I've had this conversation. Politics and political situations don't necessarily create prices in the long term, but they do have the opportunity to create chaos in the short term. And the fact that there was the market, it was like as if it didn't even happen on Wednesday. The market just, you know, kind of focused on the vaccine and, oh yeah, okay, there were these riots and possible coup attempts out of D.C. Yeah, no, don't worry about it, just keep going. It was amazing to me that there was no reaction. Well, I actually thought yesterday when we woke up and the market was weaker, I said, okay, here it comes. People have finally had now this opportunity to sit and scratch your head and say, okay, what the heck is going on here? I actually expected the market to back off more yesterday than it did.
I did too, but the Biden dip is so ingrained. And you see it on the close. There's mutual fund buying every day.
Yeah.
And once these firms, you know, collectively slimy as they all are, I mean, you and I have been around enough, and I'm not going to ask you to agree with me because you're a national guy. Front running the mutual fund buy or sell in the afternoon is still the favorite game on Wall Street, right?
Well, you know, I wonder if it is the mutual fund or is it front running now the ETF, the active ETF ones that, you know, might actually be even more interesting because that data is much more available than the mutual fund data, right?
Well,
I agree with you. I think, you know, there's lots of data out there and lots of people that are playing that data.
Well, let's put it this way. The mutual fund data is not available to you and me, but the firms that are getting the orders for the companies that have to buy on the close, they're getting it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I get you.
And they're not above. They're not above
buying. But they're also getting that data on the ETFs too. The active ETFs that are you know much more. They're more active versus passive, which is why they're called actively managed ETFs. But they're also swinging it around not only during the day, but you know on the close as well. So that you know we could argue that as well.
Well, if you were some huge mutual fund, even bigger than your personal account, and you were to call up PTI and say, we want to buy $40 bazillion worth of stock at 3 o'clock, and I'm going to say, why don't we buy $20 bazillion at 10 to 3 and sell it to them? I mean, this is not, right? This is not rocket science. This has been around since Hector was a pup, as they say, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just saying. But, no, you're right, Kenny. One of my clients and a listener of the show came in and gave me a small chart here. I don't know where the hell he dragged it out, but it's yellow, of the Venezuelan stock market as the dollar, as their dollar, whatever their currency is going straight downhill, and how much the stock market's gone up. I mean, I'm not accusing anybody of ignoring it. I just don't know what you even do with the number of a 25% money supply, which essentially means we've degraded our currency by 25%, because we had no growth. It wasn't like we grew 5%. We had no growth.
Right.
So we basically, so I mean, when you ask yourself, I mean, and I'm not gonna, you're not gonna go on national TV and say this, and I'm not either probably, but if you drop 25% more currency into the population and your stock market's up 20%, is it even really up?
Right.
Now it is in relation to your salary that's not up. It is in relation to the assets you might have that aren't going up. I mean, that's why it becomes a big mess that you don't want to go there. But these guys don't seem like they have a problem going there. And I don't think Biden group look like they're talking another $2-3 trillion. It's like manna from heaven. I mean, you talk to Pelosi.
That's going to be the most amazing thing on Thursday, because, you know, there was some talk that maybe it's going to be, you know, another $900 billion, but then they keep emphasizing trillion with an S on the end.
Yeah,
So, you know, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be 1 trillion. I don't even think it's going to be 2. I think it's going to be closer to 3. And I think he's going to try to make that argument. Interesting that he's going to make it 6 days ahead of his inauguration. But he's trying to, you know, lay the groundwork, right? He's trying to create, the support. And he's going to make the argument about why it's necessary, blah, 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 blah. And so, listen, I get it. The market loves the stimulus. Clearly, you can see what it's doing. And today, even after yesterday itself, which was really rather resilient, considering I thought if there was any day at all where the market could have backed off, it would have been yesterday. And futures are up again this morning. Although European markets are lower, U.S. futures are up in anticipation of what he's going to say on Thursday, I think.
Well, I mean, we went through this, and I'm going to say you and I were actually too young for this, probably. We were not too young for the inflation part of, you know, it's funny, Kenny, when you listen to the people on your station, CNBC or Fox or whatever, the people that are younger than us only remember the tail end of the inflation era, and all they talk about is the wage inflation. And they don't realize that was just the very tail end. But in the beginning, nobody was getting a raise. The very early parts of it, when we were starting to feel pretty good, we went off the gold standard and started pouring money into the system, and we were paying for the Vietnam War, and we got the little bit of inflation, always feels good. Someday, somewhere, somebody has to say this is a really bad idea, and we got to go the other way. And when that day comes, it's really awful, or at least it was then. I can't imagine the first day to this time when the Fed says, not only Mr. Biden or whoever the hell's in the office at the time, I bet it's in the next 4 years. No, Mr. Biden, we're not only not going to give you any more money, we got to start taking something out because this looks pretty bad. I mean, that day is going to be a really bad day for the market and for a lot of people.
Yeah, but I don't think that day is coming anytime soon at the moment. That's what I'm saying. I agree with you, and we've had this conversation. I just don't think it's coming anytime soon.
I think I would love to agree with you, Kenny, if we stopped right now with the largesse, and just said, "Okay, we've done all we can. We've done way more than we can. Let's try and weasel our way out of this, and let's just be steady for a while and have the money supply grow, you know, 4-5% a year, which is still a little high. Let's just roll with that, maybe even 6%, And let's hope that with the COVID knocking the vaccines working and all the good stuff that might be going to happen and people going back to work, let's give ourselves 2, 3, 4 years and see if we can grow our way into these prices and not have a problem. I'd be all for that, Kenny. That's not where they're going. They're talking about, this has worked great, we need more and more and more. If the Fed balance sheet goes from 7 to 12, there's no way they're making it through 4 years, in my opinion.
If it goes from 7 to 12, there's no way what?
They're making it through 4 years without the come-to-Jesus moment. I think they could probably stay here, and if they handled it properly, they might be able to work their way through it. I don't see another $3 trillion on there, that much more money pouring into the system. I don't see, you know, long-term rates being that 4 or 5 or 6 or 8% and inflation being like 12. I don't see how it
could. Well, and I agree with you. And that was the conversation yesterday as the 10-year, you know, went up through 1%. Now it's approaching, you know, 1.3, 1.5. Where's the tipping point, or at least the first tipping point? And, you know, there were a range of, they have Gundlach gone on saying, you know, it's right here. 1.3, 1.5 is the tipping point. It's Steve Weiss from Halftime Report saying that 3%. I wouldn't worry until it's 3%, and I'm not selling anything until it's 3%. And I'm sitting there going, nah, dude, I don't think that's right. I think the market will correct well long before it gets to 3%. And then the problem is, if they get behind the eight ball, if they let inflation run hot, you and I have had this conversation, if they let it run hot, suddenly it's going to surge, and they're going to be way behind the eight ball, and then you're going to start to see full percentage point moves in interest rates. So I hope that doesn't happen.
Me too.
You and I both lived through it the last time. I mean, I was just in college when it happened the last time, but we lived through it. I remember it.
Barely. Kenny, I bought a condominium with another friend on the show, Robin. Robin and I bought a condominium, and since Robin was a big shot at Pullman and knew everybody at Continental Bank, we got a bridge loan instead of a mortgage and thought we were pretty slick, or I thought we were like really slick.
Yep.
In the 6 months it took me to remodel the place, our bridge loan went from 8.5 to 14 in 6 months.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The idea that we can only go from 1.3 to 2 4 years from now, don't even think that. These guys can start jumping it by 1% every 2 weeks because that's what they did.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, they were talking yesterday, it was about, you know, that you know, higher rate would be good for the economy because it would suggest, you know, the economy's healthy and strong, blah, blah, blah. But it depends on the pace at which those rates increase. So if we jump to 1.3 or 1.5% in a relatively short period of time, or 2%, I think that's where you're going to see the market reprice dramatically. If it takes time and months and it's slow and the market, you know, the market can adjust to it, I think maybe less of a correction. But look, I'm with you. I think it's going to happen, and it's going to happen suddenly, and it's going to happen fast.
Well, what do you think? I mean, every day, I try and get down to the nuts and bolts of the stuff. Last question, Kenny, is it every day right now, somebody at the Fed is calling, and I do mean this legitimately, one of their buddies at Goldman or J.P. Morgan or someplace, because they're making all the money on this stuff, and saying,
yeah,
we're buying this stuff today, go get it for us, we want to buy it. And I honestly believe these guys are charging commissions, and they're running ahead and buying the stuff and turning around and selling it to the Fed at a higher price and getting the commissions. I think it's dirty as all get out. I don't know how competitive it is. I mean, I just suspect it is. All of a sudden, Kenny, if on Tuesday of next week or Wednesday, not the inauguration, that phone call is, no, we're not buying today, we're selling, that will be a shock through the system that, like, we've never seen.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's been buying for how long? 12 years?
More than a decade.
And all of a sudden, no, we're not. What do you want me to buy today, Kenny? No, we don't want you to buy today. We want you to sell. What? Say what? Right? As they say on the South Side, say what? Anyway, Kenny, thank you very much. Well, are you? You haven't been back to the exchange, have you?
First of all, they basically shut the exchange down again in terms of all the market makers are now once again working from home as the second surge in the virus hits New York City, and the only ones that are left are the brokers, but there's only 25% of those are allowed to be back, and they're not letting any outside people in. And so since I don't actually work there anymore, I'm considered an outside person, and so even while I have a media pass to get in, they're not honoring it at the moment just because of what's happening. So no, I haven't been there since March of last year.
Wow. All right, Kenny, take care of yourself. We'll get you back where you belong. And have a good one. Be good in Florida. Have a drink for us because we can't have one here. See ya. Talk to you next week. NASB Futures up 9, NASB Futures up 42. Come back, Mr. Mike Hart.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom O. We're on the board. SP Futures not only up 850, NASDAQ Futures up 39.50. We're still up, but not as much as when we came in. We have Mr. Mike. Hi, Mike. How are you, bud?
Hey, doing fantastic, Chief. Two days in a row.
Yeah, you know what? I'm really looking forward to it. Obviously, I love having Jeff on, but we talk about different stuff with him than we do with you. And I thought today we really probably, even though I would never say, let's put it this way, we need to talk more about some markets today. And with Jeff, yep. I tend to solve the problems of the world or try to, because he's so good at that. And there's always some really interesting stuff in luck box, obviously.
Definitely.
But I want, if you can this morning, I think you can, and I can't, right? Can you educate me and us, and a little bit of, when I say the Bitcoin phenomenon and the other places, not so much. The price is up and down because I'll be talking about tulips and all the other crap, but I don't want to talk about that. I mean, what mechanism, since we don't do any of this at PTI, nor do we want to really, what is the mechanism of which people are buying and selling, this stuff? I mean, when we go from a 40,000 top the other day where it wasn't there very long to down to 31,000 bottom, and I guess it bounced from there. I don't really pay that much attention as you do. How is the money changing hands? I mean, clearly, if that was at PTI and it was a stock or an ETF or even a bond, I guess, but nobody.
Right.
You could conceivably have margin calls. I mean, we don't do this very much. I mean, we'll put it this way. We certainly have the capability of doing it. And we have people. If you wanted, if you were a customer at PTI and you wanted to call up and buy, I'll pick a stock, IBM, if you wanted to buy 1,000 shares of it at 128, that's 128 grand. You could send a check for $64,000, and we would lend you the rest, okay, or the clearing firm would, because we have the same margins as everybody else. But that's not the lion's share of our business. Most of our business is people have stock. They use options to protect it. They want us to design a plan to, you know, either protect them or a covered right or something. But you know, we have some people that are margins, not like we don't. But, I mean, a lot of firms, I mean, that is their shtick. I mean, the Robin Hoods of the world and even to a certain extent the Schwabs, I mean, people want to buy stock, they do the rest on margin. They might be day trading, they might be short-term investing, or they might even be long-term.
Yeah.
But we don't. That's not. But I understand that it is possible some places to somehow margin this bit. But I guess my question is: the 40,000 to 31,000, would that cause the normal margin call issues that you would get in stock? I mean, how is this being done? I have no idea.
Right. Well, you know, it does have the feel of a lot of times you get the sense that this is a stock out of control to the upside. We saw a ton of stocks like that last year.
Right.
We saw stocks, and the reason why you can say looking at the option market that it's out of control to the upside, you know, typically puts are more expensive than calls. We saw a lot of stocks with call skew last year, meaning the calls were actually more expensive than puts, so the risk was being placed to the upside. With Bitcoin, you see the same thing in the options on Bitcoin, where the calls would probably be more expensive than the puts. But that being said, this isn't being driven by like the normal short squeeze, hard to borrow type stuff, because this is a futures market. And how do you get around the margining? Maybe some firms are getting around the margining, lowering it a little bit, but it's, for the most part, from what I've seen, the firms that are doing the Bitcoin, it's pretty much full margin still, because the reason why you're putting full margin on something like a Bitcoin is the volatility is simply so incredibly high on Bitcoin compared to any other future that we typically trade. Usually, future option or future margining is relatively less expensive than even stock, because you have it basically margined under what's called a span margining system. It's a little different than stock, and it tends to come in much lower. But when you have volatility off the charts, like you're seeing with Bitcoin, then you know, volatility is super high. What is the driver behind this? It's really hard to say. It almost has a feel of it has the feel of just like kind of you know, a momentum play where it's moving to the upside and everyone's buying without real fundamentals pushing the Bitcoin. And to be completely honest, and we touched on this yesterday, it's really hard to find what those fundamental trades are. What's actually moving the Bitcoin market higher, and what makes it drop 6,000 points in a day when it was just up, you know, 15,000 points from the past 2 weeks. It's a huge price swing. It's huge volatility, and this is the market just demonstrating that volatility in price action.
Well, I'm trying to get a mention my theme here, which of course people don't ever think I have one, but the reason why I'm asking, well, I've got a couple more questions on how the thing actually works, but maybe more than two, but the reason why I'm going down this road is if for instance, everybody, you know, I'm just going to throw a name out there, I mean, don't take any kind of, if for instance, people have a lot of margin on Tesla, and that's why a lot of times when this market collapses, they usually collapse from a peak at which the margin interest, the margin loans are like at record highs.
Right.
So for instance, if Tesla, and again, I'm not predicting this, the stock actually was down yesterday some, but say Tesla drops, you know, 80% or some ridiculous number. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, somebody's cooking the books or whatever, and which I don't, again, and all of a sudden Tesla opens up at say 300. Well, there's going to be people who have Tesla on margin. Now I'm guessing at most firms, the margin has been up from 50% to more in Tesla, because firms can do that. But say they don't. If all of a sudden there's people that have to sell stuff because now they have a margin excess, that carries over. You may see people selling their Spider ETF. They could be selling their Apple. They can sell anything to get equity back in their account. Well, not equity, cash back in their account to meet the margin call with Tesla. So there's a massive carryover. So what I'm trying to get to you, Mike, is if all of a sudden Bitcoin opens up at 10,000, is there going to be forced selling that's going to affect my customers at PTI, is really what I want to know. I guess that's the question. It sounds like maybe there isn't, other than the fact that people have lost wealth. But there's no actual cash carryover where that person will have to sell his Apple. I mean, he may want to, and he may sell it, but it's not like the firm is going to sell it for him if he doesn't. Doesn't sound like it.
Right. That's a really interesting question, Chief. I don't know the answer. What I can say is I don't think it'd be the same as Tesla opening down, because you would see that dramatic spillover effect. No question about it. You have Tesla now trading even in the S&P 500.
Right.
And the connectedness of Tesla to many of the other equities that we trade, I think that would necessitate a sell-off. If Tesla were down 500 points in the morning, we would see a massive sell-off throughout the market because of that reason exactly. It's the need to find capital somewhere, and it's going to have a spillover effect without a doubt. I think Bitcoin is sort of operating in a bubble. I don't think Bitcoin is connected to this market very much right now. There's a huge wealth loss that will most definitely occur if, you know, you see a $20,000 drop, but you got to put that in the context that, you know, we just saw a $20,000 spike going back to December 17th. So, you know, this is just sort of, I think operating outside of, what's driving the market. I think Bitcoin could have been up 6,000 points today, and you wouldn't see much of a difference in what the S&P 500 is doing. So I think the market and Bitcoin are still somewhat disconnected. As much as people like to think Bitcoin is taking over as sort of the a new global asset that's going to represent wealth, I don't think it's there yet.
Well, Mike, now if somebody calls up PTI or where you are, Tasty Trade, and says, "All right, I want to buy 1,000 shares of Lululemon," all right, first of all, you got a lot of money, $362. But say you do, I mean, you're going to get a confirm electronic or paper from PTI or Tasty Trade, and it's going to say either we or you went to the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ or wherever the hell we went, and we bought this stock. It's trading $362.50, and that's where it happened, and that's where it paid. And you know just what you did and where, whether it's a future or not. There's a serious tracking to this. Mm-hmm. If we ever wanted to be in the business, which I don't, or I don't know if you guys are, I'm not even going to ask. But if somebody says I want to buy some Bitcoin, where the hell do I even go? Where do you go? And how is there a record of the transaction for the client?
Right. Bitcoin itself is sort of a dark market. If Bitcoin weren't traded, if they never created these future contracts for Bitcoin, Bitcoin would still be the secondary product that people would be interested in, because anytime anything goes from $500 to $40,000, it's going to raise more than a few eyebrows and everyone's going to be watching it. But without the validation of a future contract, you wouldn't see this stuff traded. And in fact, the matter is, the future contract just opens the door for Bitcoin to maybe at some point develop some real interconnectedness within this market. But as it stands right now, I don't know. You know, I think it's too dark of a market. I think it's too not understood, really. The factors behind it, what pushes it, and what we can look at to say this is a Bitcoin moving event, it still isn't really well known. And I think that's why when it comes to markets, we're talking about price discovery. And usually price discovery for these larger futures, they're in a pretty tight range. You know, we don't anticipate 10% movements in most of the future markets that we watch. It's very rare. I mean, it does happen during times of turmoil. But Bitcoin, it seems, during times of any time, really, you know, we could be seeing 5 to 10% expected moves on Bitcoin, which is absolutely, when you look at the rest of the futures industry, that's an insane amount of volatility being priced into a futures contract. So I think there's still a lot to learn and a lot for the market to start figuring out, because as it stands right now, price discovery is super wide, and it's anyone's guess where this thing is actually worth.
Well, Mike, there's, you know, lately, I don't know why I get myself in this trick bag, but being the independent soul that I always think that I am, but I'm getting more of a I think we have to have a little bit of a thought for the process. And I'm stunned when Alibaba started having these problems with the Jack Ma fighting with the Communist Party. I mean, as much as I know people, and we've traded a lot of it here for clients, so it's not, you know, whatever, not like everybody hasn't, you know, I guess I won't say made money or something on the deal, but the thought of that thing ever being on the New York Stock Exchange with no voting power and without really any assets, just getting the assets owned by Jack Ma being able to grab back by the Communist Party at any time, the thought that thing's on the New York Stock Exchange is appalling to me, to be honest with you. It has from day one, even though, like I said, we have customers who have traded and made money on it, and, you know, I guess I wouldn't say all of them, but I don't keep track. But, I mean, I'm sure you guys have traded a lot of it, too. So, but still, if you think about it, I'm going to say that the head guys at your firm and you would shake their head and say, what the hell is it even doing here? And when you look at the futures contracts, I mean, I'll just be brief here, try to be, because it's a complicated subject. When you talk about corn or soybeans or natural gas or whatever it is, and some of them get harder, but if you look at the mechanism of the futures contract, I mean, there's a reason why the Board of Trade opened roughly the same time as the I&M Canal opened, because now you had a delivery point, right? If your futures contracts are useless, if there isn't a mechanism near the end for the futures price to match the cash price, and to be in the way that it happens is if one becomes deliverable. So if the price of corn at the Board of Trade is $20 and the price of corn on the street is $5, the mechanism is if the $20 doesn't match the $5 when the contract expires, the farmer drives down the street and says, here's my bushel of corn, and that's good enough. Right?
Right.
I mean, but the object of the exchanges is to very rarely let that happen, because you want the futures price and the spot price, the price of the real commodity, you want them to just go naturally together near the end, to where nobody has to drive down the street with their bushel of corn, right?
That's exactly right.
That's the whole mechanism. That's why when that doesn't happen, the exchanges have people at work in every one of these products, and they're serious people, and they will let you know that, hey, wait a minute, the corn isn't corn futures aren't dropping in volume down or open interest like they ought to be near the end. Is there a problem? And they'll find that the delivery spot in Marseille, that some bleep has cornered all the storage places and is trying to corner. They'll immediately, raise margins on some stuff, and they'll force the thing to match up so people don't have to show up with their tractors. And so, but every single one of these is a massive issue. Natural gas delivery, regular gas delivery, oil delivery. And look what happened, was it 2 years ago now, in Cushing, Oklahoma, where you couldn't get any more there, and how the stuff didn't match, and what a disaster it was for the oil market, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
But I have, how the hell do you get Bitcoin futures to match up with Bitcoin near the end?
Right, and that's just it. There isn't that natural hedging that occurs. How do you get them to match up? You leave it to the open forces of the market, and yeah, they should match up at the end. But the typical factors that push these things back in line, and the typical hedging mechanisms behind a lot of these futures, just simply don't exist right now for Bitcoin. You can't put a trade there. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, I guess I'm so passionate about this because lately I've been just reading headline after headline of Bitcoin reaching 150,000, Bitcoin 200,000 plus. And these are legitimate firms coming out and making these tremendous predictions. And to me, that's just what they are. They're predictions. But, to have something that's acting as a form of currency and saying it's going to quadruple in price is an insane sort of forecast on something that they're claiming is replacing gold. I just don't understand this type of volatility, and like you said, Chief, you know, the mechanisms that we're so used to seeing in the futures market, now the futures market's the Wild West, but when you look at the Bitcoin market, it's beyond the Wild West. It's an insane walk down some wild, wild moves. And if you're going to trade Bitcoin, I would say you want to do it really, really small. I wouldn't put huge bets behind this because there is simply the door for movement is just too wide open.
Well, I don't know if you listened to the first part of the show. I was talking to Kenny about, you know, where the inflation might be, where it is, and if we're talking, you know, the Fed's up to this $7 trillion balance sheet or more, and they've essentially dropped 25% more cash into the system in a year when we've had negative growth. And it's that's never happened here before. I mean, before I say that, I'm not sure if during the Civil War the greenbacks, you know, dropped 25% on the place, but other than that, I will absolutely say to you that has never happened here, either maybe during the Revolutionary War or the Civil War, because it didn't happen in World War II, and it didn't happen in World War I. World War II, the average money supply growth was about 11 or 12 per year, and World War I was slightly bigger than that. I'm going to say 14, 15, but it clearly wasn't 25. And I'm thinking maybe maybe you could catch me with a 1964 year where we were 30% higher because of the greenbacks, but if you did, you got me there, okay, but it was a while ago, let's put it that way. And we've never seen anything quite like this. But my question with Kenny was, what's the day, you know, what's the straw that breaks the camel's back? I mean, when does the Fed say we can't do this anymore, and they call up J.P. Morgan and they say, how much do you want to buy today? And they go, no, we're not buying, we're selling. And they all of a sudden, you know, that phone call reverberates through every office in the world, including yours and mine, right?
That phone call would change the dynamic instantly. And they honestly, unless they want to cause a panic, that would have to be projected to the streets months and months and months beforehand to start giving the feel of a reversal. I think if they just out of the blue started reversing the policy, let's be honest, it's been a policy for a long time. Now we're going on over probably a decade of buying. If they're selling all of a sudden, I think we're looking at a market that, one, is supported by the Fed, and I don't think that's even speculation at this point. I think it's universally agreed that it's supported by the Fed. And if we do see the Fed reverse course on this, we're going to see, you know, a tremendous, repricing of assets, and it's going to be much lower. That would be my guess.
Well, actually, not to get too technical, but to the extent that they buy shorter-term bonds and the extent they buy mortgages, they almost don't have to give the sell call. They just have to do nothing. And the mortgages will just run off the books as people refinance and as the interest payments come into the Fed. And all of a sudden, you know, once in a while, somebody refinances the mortgage and sends them the check for the whole amount, or the 5-year bond or the 2-year bond that they just bought, you know, I won't say expires, but essentially expires, and they just get the money for the bond. I think if they do nothing, the balance sheet runs down by itself. They have to keep buying just to keep it even, I think.
Yeah. It's almost crazy that we're talking about letting natural market forces be at play.
Yeah.
Because that's what it feels like right now, is they're artificially not allowing market forces to take over, because I think the outlook is really quite dire at the moment. It's subject to change, and that's obviously everyone's hope, is that you turn the corner while you're sort of living life on credit, and hopefully things do turn the corner, and all this action by the Fed will sort of catch up to reality, because reality hasn't caught up to where the Fed is at this moment in time. I think you're right. If you did nothing, they don't even have to reverse course. So you just do nothing and allow free market forces to take over, you would still see that repricing of assets, and I think you'd see a big sell-off. I think we'd see that sell-off that we're still all kind of looking at the market saying, how over the course of last year, with all the turmoil and all the uncertainty, how are we making all-time new highs? How, you know, even today, I think we saw new highs
at one point anyways for the market all time. It's a normal theme. Pretty much every day we're so used to seeing new highs in the market that that's kind of the norm. Every morning we wake up and we're making new highs. Things don't add up, and that sort of expectation can't reasonably be expected going forward, you know, into perpetuity, that we're always making new highs.
Well, just to put some numbers on it, let's say, I could dig through the, I could have one of my Fed guys help me through the Fed balance sheet because I probably couldn't do it myself. If the Fed balance sheet is $7 trillion, I'm going to say they probably still have somewhere between 1.5 and 2, it might be more, might be a little less, in mortgages. Right? Mm-hmm. So say it's 2, and the average mortgage is people pay it off or refinance it in what, 4 to 5 years? Especially with the rates down like this. So that means if the Fed did nothing, that it's $500 billion a year that's going to come off the thing just by mortgages. That's just the mortgage piece coming at them, $400. If say 5 years, be charitable. So that's $400 billion that's going to come at them, that if they did nothing just on the mortgage side, next year the balance sheet would be 6-6, not 7.
Right.
That's not even counting the bonds that come to their end date, and they get the check for that. So they have to go out and buy $400 billion worth of mortgages a year just to break even. And if they just stop that, you would see that that's the number we're talking about. Hey, after break, I'm leading you to the next thing regarding the Bitcoin, to come back to that. Yesterday we mentioned near the end that, you know, people's reaction to, well, Bitcoin isn't worth anything. Neither is your dollar. Neither is your stinking dollar, sir. Well, I can't very well say that they are, quote, wrong. But right now, we're all, except for the people that are bailing and going into Bitcoin and want to get paid in Bitcoin or the other stuff, you and I are still dollar creatures, right? So is Maddie.
That's
so
right.
Well, okay. And we'll get the explanation after the show. In 1913, there were $28 to a gold ounce. Now there's 33,000. At what number do you and I say, yeah, this dollar ain't worth a squat? It looks to me like a greenback in 1867. Don't look like bleep. I mean, obviously, I don't think we're there yet. But when are we going to get there? I mean, we're not that far off. But let's talk about that after the break. S&P futures only up 650 now. NASDAQ futures up 19. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure.
But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, just met Weber on the board. And Mr. Mike Hart with us in Tasty Trade as well. S&P futures up 675, way lower than they were early. We were up 14, I think, when we came in. NASDAQ futures up 21. Looking at my debtclock.org, which I should never go to because all it does is aggravate me, but I'm there. I blame Mike for that. The Dow futures up 45. They were up 60. Individual stocks, not much movement. Well, I got Goldman Sachs up another 368. Mike, what the hell did Biden's group promise this Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley? I mean, for God's sake. These guys are what they've been, they're going to double under a guy's first 4 months in office. I mean, something's going on. They didn't even pick a Goldman Sachs Secretary of the Treasury, but Janet must be so tight with those people. Anyway, I'm not going to go into personalities. Maybe I already did, but something's going on here. DAX down 13 now, 0.1%. FTSE down 42.6%. CAC around down 6.1%, so quiet. Slightly to the downside over in Europe. The other way over in Asia, Nikkei only up 25, that's 0.1%, but Shanghai and Hang Seng, mainland China is up like 2%. Shanghai up 76, that's 2.2%. Hang Seng up 368, that's 1.3%. But they're not mainland China, remember that. Bonds, 10 years, 1.17 now. Boy, it took us forever to get to 1, and as soon as we got to 1, now we're going up like dinner through a goose here, for God's sake. Bund, minus 0.47, so they're up, 12 basis points in the last 6 days, Mike, something like that, even though they're still negative. Japan up positive 0.04. They're the only ones that haven't moved at all. Oil up 62 cents on the WTI to 52.87. Brent up 77 cents, 56.43. That's 1.4%. Oil is 11-month high, heading towards 57 bucks, and we've got gold. Was up, now it's down. It's down a buck 10. 1849, silver up 1 cent. Gold was up $11 like 10 minutes ago. Now it's down. Silver 25.30. Many we have for us traffic, weather, sports. Now it was like Friday. David gave the first go around, said the same thing you did. Everything was fine everywhere. And the second round was like demolition derby.
Still not too bad this morning. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We do have a crash on I-80. The westbound side at, it says 96th Avenue, which is exit number 145, down in the south suburbs. There's a crash on I-80 heading west. That's been moved to the left shoulder, but that's causing a bit of a delay if you're heading 80 westbound. No issues on the eastbound side. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Same for coming up Lakeshore Drive. Stevenson and Eisenhower are all quiet. Kennedy, there's some slow down spots out near O'Hare, but no accidents or issues to report. Edens looks good. Only other crash in the area is up in the northern suburbs. At US 41 at West Lee Road, there is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, some sunshine early, then we'll be mostly cloudy, but a bit warmer than it's been the last couple of days. We'll reach a high of 38. Could touch 40 tomorrow and Thursday, so that'll be nice. Right now it is mostly clear and 28 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 66 today. Right now it's clear and 39. In sports, college football playoff last night, it was Alabama all over Ohio State, 52-24. NBA basketball, the Bulls and Celtics are postponed tonight due to a COVID outbreak on the Celtics roster. No makeup date announced for that one just yet. Suns were in action last night. They lost to the Wizards 128-107. College hoops, DePaul lost to number 25 UConn 60-53. Loyola beat Indiana State 58-48. And lastly, we failed to mention this last hour, Chief, but the White Sox made a big free agent splash last night. They signed former A's closer Liam Hendricks, who is considered to be probably the best closer in the game the last couple of seasons, to a 3-year, $39 million deal, but really, it's a $54 million guaranteed deal because the fourth-year option and the fourth-year buyout, depending upon how it plays out, is for $15 million guaranteed as well. So he's guaranteed $54 million, but he's guaranteed to pitch for the White Sox for the next 3 years. Chief.
Eddie, what do you, and Mike, I know you're kind of a sports guy as well, what do you think the actual numbers are on these teams last year in terms of how much they won or lost? I mean, not won or lost, but the made or lost.
Well, I assume they're all significantly down, like hemorrhaging, to the point, well, most of these teams have laid off half of their scouting staff, half of their marketing, all of that. I mean, they're treading water by their standard. Now, I don't necessarily believe when billion-dollar owners cry poor, but there was definitely a big hit last year.
What, just to refresh my memory, because I've heard some numbers tossed about, and since I can't confirm them, I'm not going to say them. I mean, we have a little bit of decency. Just for a review, I mean, one of you guys will remember. What did they pay the players last year? Did they pay them? They played what, 60 games? So did they pay them? That would be what, 40% of the salary? Is that what they gave them? Or they give them?
No, that's exactly right. Yeah, they gave them a prorated salary based on the 60 games versus the 162.
Right. So they got a prorated amount from probably network TV, right, and radio?
That's my understanding, yep.
All right, so, but you have the full amount regarding your stadiums and your scouting people. And now, did they not pay the minor leaguers? I know there was no minor league. Did they just not pay those guys at all?
That's a good question. I know that some of them, some of the prospects and minor league guys worked out in the winter, in their spring training facilities during the whole season, the whole summer. I assume they got paid something. But I don't think that was everybody.
Well, I think the minor league, Corinne, boy, I got to review all this stuff. That's why I got guys like you on the show. A minor leaguer, if you're a big star, I'm going to pay Matty Weber what $5 million to or ten or whatever it is to sign. But then once you're in the minor leagues, you just get paid the same amount as everybody else, right?
Right. Yeah. So you'd have your signing bonus and plus your regular minor league stipend, which is what everyone else gets.
Right. So. If you add all this together, you know, depending on whatever stadium deal they might have, or the Cubs, if you went out on a limb and spent bazillions of dollars on bars around the place that are now closed.
And a TV network.
And a TV network that I think, boy, is anyone watching that thing? I mean, once you got
well, now you can't watch it anywhere unless you have Comcast or RCN.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Dish doesn't have them or DirecTV?
Well, I mean, I think they do too. But yeah, unless you have regular cable or regular Dish, right now I don't think you can get it anywhere because Hulu dropped them, and Hulu was the only streaming provider that was carrying them.
Okay,
and that's why me and a lot of people I know went with Hulu over, you know, YouTube TV and some of the other options for streaming service. And then after the season ended, Hulu dropped them, and so I don't know what they're going to do. If they're going to, you know, be a la carte, which would be great, or if they're going to latch on with somebody. From a streaming perspective, or are some people that want to watch the Cubs going to go back to regular cable?
I just saw that the spring training schedule was put out there. Fans, no fans, anybody, or just to be determined? I mean, Florida going to have fans and Arizona not? I mean, is this no determination yet? We're just waiting to see because of the vaccine?
Yeah, I haven't heard any determination on any of that yet. I would assume, so, you know, last year they started back up in July. They decided to go no fans, and then in the playoffs, they went limited fans in Texas and Florida, California, where the games were held. There, it's outdoors. It was warm, sort of a different, you know, time, I guess. March and April, I don't know what they're going to do. My guess would be the southern states will allow fans, and the northern states won't, at least until for a little while, just like you're seeing in basketball and in football.
Okay, Mike, I'm gonna try to do this
as intelligently as I can, even though it's an insane assumption. So how does that work?
When I was a young kid,
my dad died early. I was real close to one uncle, and he was a good guy. He was a fighter pilot, World War II, right? So he was a military training and everything. And whenever we'd see something, we'd be driving and somebody'd act like a total bleep, he'd say, "Now, time, if everybody acted like that, would we have order or chaos?" You know, the answer obviously would be chaos. I get the feeling now, and virtually, maybe it's just an older guy talking, but everything we're seeing happen, where we have people that are pushing things to the extreme, and I think it was starting to happen, a lot of political thing in here, before Trump, but I'm not talking about anything that happened this week. I mean, God, we've been over that, or we will be over it again, I'm sure, at some point, with Lou and everybody else, but the point being is, what Trump did, and I think it conceivably could have a positive outcome, but in the meantime, it's probably not. In a sense that he pretty much challenged everything that we thought that there were, I use the term gentlemanly rules, not that women don't have gentlemanly rules, they do, on everything, and we found out that really the rules are pretty much lacking, that the sleazeballs in Congress do trade ahead of the market without really anybody going after them. We found out that, you know, he managed to wreck attorney-client privilege because he had his attorney doing stuff for him that you could never say was privilege, paying off hookers, right? You know, people where you thought there were rules, there really aren't. When you thought there was enforcement, there's really not. And we have all kinds of other things around to where, you know, we have some police shootings that shouldn't have been, massive demonstrations, defund police. All kinds of crazy.
I think, you know, ultimately it's just a time of more questions. There, I don't think we've ever seen a time of this much uncertainty. And, you know, the fact that status quo has been challenged, a lot of it's been challenged through the actions of Trump. And, you know, and it's also had a spillover effect into other parts of the government. And it ultimately gets spilled over into the American public, or at least the perception of what we perceive to be almost rules of the game. We realize, aren't even written down on paper, and they're just that gentlemanly codes of conduct, and those all have been challenged. So all of a sudden, we have so much uncertainty in the market. It's no surprise that last year we saw the highest volatility really that we've ever seen carry over for the entire year since March 11th or 12th. That's when volatility really spiked, and we haven't seen a pullback in volatility to anything close to historical averages. We've been way above it. Even as the market inches and inches towards new highs, this in any other year, this type of action in the market, we would have volatility at all-time lows. And you could say that with a very high probability. This last year was ideal for low volatility, and it's the complete opposite of what we saw. We saw the highest volatility. Last year saw the largest price range ever in the market, the largest price extremes, price moves. If you just look at sheer dollar movement, we eclipsed previous years. So, I think you're hitting on one point of that volatility, Chief, is the fact that every sort of standard that we knew or thought to be already factored into the market has now been just ripped out from under the carpet and is up in the air. Things are trying to fall into place. I don't think the Fed is cushioning the blow, because I think this much uncertainty, this much volatility without a backstop would lead to, we'd probably be beyond just a recession. We'd probably be dealing with, a relatively serious depression at this point if we didn't have these monetary policies in place. So it's a really scratch your head kind of what's going to come next, because with the human factor at play, and the human factor always is at play, but trying to predict where this is all going to go is a very, very difficult equation to kind of figure out.
See, I think I'm halfway between where you are and I don't know, maybe where the world is, because I think that the role of the Fed at some point, given all the stuff that's happened, you don't want the market going to 2,000. I mean, I'm with you on that. You don't want the money supply dropping dramatically to where people can't get liquidity and those kinds of things. But there's a lot of middle ground there between doing that and jamming it to a new record so 1% of the population outstrips the rest of the people like never has happened before. I mean, there's a method, you have to ask, is there a man behind the curtain there? Just like.
You do.
And I honestly have to ask, and I, you know, again, because I'm going to get back to some dollar or money stuff I want to ask you, but you have to ask yourself, if somehow we just can't seem to get to nursing homes with these vaccines, are we really trying to bump off all these old people to sell Social Security? I mean, this is not that hard to put somebody in a van and send them to a nursing home and vaccinate people. Is there somebody behind? I mean, in my day, like I hope that my day's not over, but in my day, there's a certain amount of common sense. I mean, we're going to make sure there's water for everybody to run in the marathon, but we're not going to make everybody drink a gallon every mile. Or we're going to kill them. I mean, we talked about the Fed. Should we have let the money supply drop this year? No. Should we have maintained a 3 or 5% growth even on its own if it would have dropped? Yes. Do we need to do 25%? Frig no.
Right.
I mean, I'm looking at the Bitcoin thing, and you and I mean, I'm bashing the Bitcoin as having no value as opposed to, quote, the dollar. But I'm also very mindful of people saying, well, the dollar doesn't have. Now, I'm looking at this dollar to gold ratio in 1913, 28 bucks. Now it's 33,000. What I'm asking for, what I'm searching for, and this is what I'm not finding it, Maddie and Mike, some adult someplace to stand up in the room and say, we got away with it so far, this is as far as we can go, because we've got these alternatives coming out there. We should take this as a message that a lot of people don't think our crap is worth a crap anymore, or it's not getting there, or it won't be very long. Let's try and get this 33.8 per ounce ratio not to go any worse, and maybe 3-4 years from now have it back to 31 or 30. I'm not saying back to $28 like it was in 1913,
right,
but some adult someplace. But I see absolutely the opposite. I see the saying, we got away with it to 33,000, we can push it to 50. The same thing, if you drive to Dan Ryan, there's no policeman. I drove 95 last week, now I'm driving 105, because I see it every time I'm on the friggin' expressway. Or Matty Weber gets a knife pulled on him in broad daylight on an L train here. That guy's not getting arrested, because if the cop had a taser him or shoot him and somebody had him on film, the guy's getting fired, he's getting sued. All of a sudden, you got a problem. I'm seeing this stuff being driven to the extreme everywhere, not just in finance. I mean, how the hell does the Fed go after anybody for insider trading now after seeing what the Senate's done? And yet they do. I mean, I think, Mike, help me here. Are we just unglued, or are we coming to muck time here, or is there going to be an adult in the room that says we can't go any further, let's stop this?
Well, that's an excellent point. And I think we've gone way, way far down the road. But, you know, part of it, I mean, and this is just my interpretation of the currency market. Everyone knows the currency market's so difficult to interpret, and there's so many games being played. But I view it from kind of a game theory standard, and it's getting played on a world stage. And, you know, if we were operating like this when the rest of the world wasn't operating and playing by this game plan, then I think we would be seriously detrimentally hit on globally by our market, right? You know, we wouldn't see appreciation in the stock market. We'd see actually a huge depreciation. The fact of the matter is the rest of the world's, you know, going right along. But at some point, I think you're right. There has to be... the disconnect can only exist for so long, and delusional type markets that are trading outside of any real price that's fair is going to be short lived over the long period of time. I think we're past the point of a real adult standing up. I think we've gone so far down this road that we almost have to, live with this lie. I don't think you can fix it. I don't think, maybe rather than just improving the ratio, maybe, the goal should be, can we just keep it here and not make things worse?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
I don't even know if that's possible.
I'd be happy with that. And I would say that, if I thought for a second that Joe Biden was the adult in the room, or if it was me, I'd say, okay, it looks to me like with the vaccines coming out and those kinds of things that we've got another 3-4 months to absorb this stuff. We're going to do just a little more stimulus, and then we're back to normal, and we're going to start pulling back some of the stimulus in because we're going to be back to normal. Some slight message like that instead of saying, oh no, how much more you want? 3 trill? 5 trill? It sounds like he's a carnival barker. I mean, do we really think that this, where are we headed with this? I mean, I don't see any sense that we got away with it this far. Let's thank our lucky stars. It's like, I don't know. It's like, playing softball and you say, okay, I normally hit the right center, but I'm gonna try one to see if I can get it over to left fielder's head because I normally can't. And if I catch it just right and I do, I'm not going to go up the next time and say, well, that was easy. Let me try that again. I mean, I was grown up. I was born in a different era. I got away with it once. Let's just be lucky with that. Right? Let's not try and do it every day. But the mentality is not like that now. I got away with 90 miles an hour on the Ryan. Instead of saying I can drive 90, let's try 100. Let's try 110. I mean, somehow this has all changed. And I see it changing in the market. I mean, it's clearly changing in the market. I mean, not that it hasn't happened before. It happened in 2000 for some stocks. But right now I don't see any, the insider trading. I don't see any of these firms, having any problem with this. I don't see any with any of the stuff that you and I see. I don't see the Treasury net front run and everything like they do. I don't see the JP Morgans and the Goldmans not doing exceptionally better than God the next 2 years. I mean, I don't see anything changing here to you.
No, I don't. And, and the fact of the matter is, this is why I always go back to volatility when we have kind of conversations that go down this road, because volatility is the metric that we all need to be looking at as sort of that, it's sort of the speedometer going down with Dan Ryan. If right now volatility were trading at 9 or 10, I could say, things are working out because the market has a handle around this, and we have low volatility in the market. The fact of the matter is the speedometer or the VIX tells us we're trading actually way high. We're at 23, 2364 right now. That is 8.5 points above the historical average. That's a lot in VIX terms. And that's kind of where we've been averaging over the past year. Somewhere between 20 and 30 has been the range. But you want to know what? Things could be worse. And we can see this in the VIX. If you want to know how fast this economy is moving and how much uncertainty is out there, just look at the VIX every morning. It's going to give you a handle on what the market's saying today is the amount of risk out there. And, if you start seeing that number hang out between 30 and 40, it's an amazing leap. But, hey, 20 to 30 happened this past year. Yep. 30 to 40 could happen this coming year. And if that were to happen, things are really starting to move out of control. And that's being told to us not by so much price movements that we are seeing, which we will be seeing massive price movements if that's the case. But the fact of the matter is, VIX is that speedometer that tells us just how out of control things that feel out of control, just how out of control they actually are.
Well, Mike, I don't study this stuff as much as you do, the VIX stuff. I still call it implied volatility. It's far gone I am. But if the world felt, the market, the financial world felt, that we really were on the right track, that we're really talking, somewhere or another, these states will get their act together on the vaccine. It should have been doing it already, but they'll get it together. And it's now, January to by the end of February. I mean, pretty much anybody who wants a vaccine is going to get it, or the middle of March. And all of a sudden, the Fed can stand down and not be pouring stuff in, and we can be inching toward normalcy. You would expect the implied volatility up. Continue to use that term, unfortunately, for like a week or a year from July or a year from next January, shouldn't be at 23. It should be at 14 or 15. It should gradually be coming down. And I don't think that's happening, do you?
It's actually not happening. No, it's going much higher in the future.
Yeah, so, yeah. So that and what is that, that chills my spine, to be honest with you.
Right. It's a prediction. It's the market's forecast of things to come. Is that and the market, you know, when it comes down to dollars and cents, and the market's actually pretty good at taking those rose-colored glasses off and saying, well, you know, when it comes down to actual bets that we're willing to place, we're betting on more volatility. We aren't betting on things looking brighter in the future right now. And that's exactly what the implied volatility is telling us about. That's the story it's painting right now.
Mike, that scares me more than we got to go, but that scares me more than anything else, because long-term capital, the volatility near-term was huge, but when out of Euro was right back down to normal, and it's not this time.
Right.
Anyway, S&P futures down a quarter, down 1.25, now we're down. NASDAQ futures down 13. Mike, terrific stuff. I really enjoyed it, buddy. I'll talk to you next week. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.